Well, hello, I'm Kevin from Atlanta. I'm friends of Brian and Brian. I'm fans of Crossroads Community Church Cincinnati, but you're obviously not fans of mine. Anybody would make me follow that does not really care about the guest communicator at all. I was sitting there trying to think, okay, how do you follow that? I mean, what was that? I was just trying, I'm looking for the spiritual significance. You know what I mean? It's like, is that a mystical convergence of like soulish rock combining the meditative, mellow moments of the voice of James Taylor, but recognizing there's a child in all of us. Kind of a cookie monster that wants sugar on everything. I mean, I was going off, but I decided, I'm going to stick with my own notes. Okay. However, Brian asked me to give a report in his absence, and this will be in my report. However, that was, without a doubt, the most profound, pointless performance I've ever seen. Would you agree? Give it up for the guys. I mean, Steve and the team, this is awesome. I hope I'm not pointless, so let's give it a shot. Here's the thought. Have you noticed that realizing life dreams is easier in the movies? Have you noticed that? I'm not the only one. For $8.50, you can see the dream, the hopes, the trauma, the breakdown, and it wraps up nicely. I like to go because that's nothing like my life. Tom Cruise is making a great living at this, though. He's produced $2.6 billion alone for Paramount Pictures. Not bad. He's doing okay. All he has to do is wake up as Ray Ferrier in War of the Worlds. Rolls over in the bed. He's Ray Ferrier. He's playing a role. If you've seen that movie, you know that he comes on the scene as the guy with some broken dreams. His marriage didn't work, separated from his kids, and he's a deadbeat dad. It seems obvious that he cares more about his car than he does his kids. And then, just like the movies, an alien invasion at just the right time lands on the scene. Isn't that awesome? I mean, do you know how helpful that is to readjust what really matters in your life? Wouldn't that be awesome? Like, you're trying to help somebody who really doesn't get it, and you're like, I'm going to call down an alien invasion, which is going to help you recalibrate what you really think is important in life. Isn't that a great... And so all the drama and the trauma of the whole thing and the chaos, and what happens at the end? Ray Ferrier becomes a hero. Man, he rescues his kids. But what father, what mother, what family doesn't want that to happen? Everybody wants that to work in their lives. He wakes up in MI3 as Ethan Hunt. Oh yeah. Mission Impossible. And he has an impossible mission. Only this time there's a love interest, right? Yeah, this time he's got a wife he's in pursuit of, and, you know, he marries, and everybody, all the women are, oh, and all the guys are, get on to the action, you know. A movie, a little bit for everybody. But through the drama and the trauma of the movie, what happens? His wife's life is on the line. His career's crashed. Ah, but at the end of the movie, within 120 minutes, he rescues his wife, yeah. And he rescues his career. It's all good. It's all good at the end. I'm watching that. That's not my life. I'm 850 in, but I can't buy that. Have you noticed? In fact, people think, man, I'd love to wake up as Tom Cruise. Something I'd like to wake up with Tom Cruise. That's a woman's problem. We're not going to talk about that. But the thoughts occurred. But when he wakes up, he doesn't wake up as Ray Ferrier. He doesn't wake up as Ethan Hunt. He wakes up as Tom Cruise. I was reading in USA Today, it's what prompted the thoughts. His life isn't like the movies either. Underneath the promotion of the movies was this little story. Nicole Kidman says her divorce from Tom Cruise was a major shock, and she still loves him. Kidman 38 says, he was huge. Still is. To me, he was just Tom, but to everyone else, he is huge. But he was lovely to me, and I loved him. I still love him.
Cruz filed for divorce in February of 2001 after 10 years of marriage, citing irreconcilable differences. The divorce was finalized later that year. Here's what she says. I always knew the rug was going to be taken out from underneath me at some stage. Isn't that interesting? I always knew my life wasn't going to be like the movies, in other words. So Kidman says, I knew I was going to get hit with something, but I think a divorce and the demise of what your family is a little death in itself. Cruz and Kidman have two children, Isabella 13 and Connor 11. And, you know, Tom Cruise figured out what we all know. Real life is not like a movie. And high capacity, highly gifted, highly capable people see their dreams go in the pits and feel like they're in prisons. And we all know the familiarity of that pursuit. You know, I set off in my 20s to get married, and I found the woman of my dreams. Her name is Marcia. And I had no idea when we got married, knowing full well that I had made it clear it was all about me, that when we got married, she thought it was going to be all about her. And that was complicated. And when we got married, it took me a long time to train her and form her into the woman I needed her to be. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, and you know what? Yeah, you're responding like that. But we all think about this. We don't really even know we think that way. And irreconcilable differences, wow, that exists in every relationship. And you know, when I grew up, my parents divorced when I was about 11 years old, and it just crashed our world. And I'm not speaking inside anybody else's world, but I'll just say inside my world, you know, I said, I will never divorce because I can't do to a kid what that did to me. And yet I have to tell you, men and women, I'm a couple years into marriage, and I'm wondering how my parents made it as long as they did. I'm like, no wonder. And so have kids. That'll help. You people with kids, you say to young couples, have kids, it'll bring you together. Go for it. So we had kids. Several. Didn't help. In fact, in the early stages of my kids, I couldn't provide for them. Dreams crashing. I remember when we set off from Michigan to follow a God prompt in our life, as we understood it, to go down to Atlanta and to do this courageous follow God, plant a church to reach people who are spiritually unresolved, far from God. We're fired up. God's in it. So we sell everything. We go down there, and God's just going to make like this huge impact. And we, you know, we're going to change our world, and because God's in it. And my career didn't go so well. We didn't have the kind of things you saw early on here and even now. In our early stages, it was a bit tough. We did all of our marketing and all of our efforts and phone calls and mailers and tried to, and we have this grand opening, and 800 people say they're going to be there. You know how many showed up in this 450-seat auditorium we rented? 65. I spoke to 375 empty chairs, and I should have been pleased. It was the best day we had for years. Years. Well, it's no big deal to you. It's not your career, but it's mine. In the months and years that followed, we systematically lost everything financially. We lost our house and our cars, and emptied every account. We're living on borrowed money, doing odd jobs and wondering why we're still staying in this thing. But God had put something in us. And at one point, at least for me, the bottom of the pit was when I had to ask my wife to go back to work because I couldn't pull things together and had lost our health insurance. And with the kids, we couldn't exist that way. And we had 3 months in which we would be without. And I remember saying, hey, God, you haven't done much yet, but could you keep us, my kids, healthy for 3 months? Now, I know you've never talked to God that way, and I know I'm not supposed to, but I said it. I did. I just said, you haven't helped much. You know, care to keep my kids healthy for 3 months? The answer was no. No, really don't. Daughter ended up in children's hospital for a week, and I signed up another promissory note for $4,000. And I just, It all crashed. And I wondered, oh, God, where are you? And what are you doing? Did you ever wonder that? I might think I don't know that we talk about it all the time, but you know, maybe you have some area in your life that's going great, but you have an area that really matters in your life. It's crashing. You just, God, where are you? Joseph had to wonder that. Joseph had to wonder, God, where are you? 4,000 years ago, Joseph, in his adventure, had dreams, and his life was contemporary for him. His story is recorded in the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. It begins in chapter 37. And it captures the adventure of Joseph and how God moved in his life when Joseph didn't know where God was or what he was doing. What's intriguing is how God kindly took the story of Joseph and revealed that he was working all along to grow Joseph up. And that there was a pattern involved in this. And just maybe in all of the pits and prisons, God was also using that pattern to grow me up. And God brought some light to the darkness of our life, and it has transformed us. And I'll offer it to you, and maybe if God's in this in any way, or wherever you are in your journey, this might serve you well. So let's step into the story of Joseph, because I think there were at least four key growth gates that God was pressing him through, helping him win, and they really do matter. And just maybe God's pressing these same four growth gates into your life. So let's take a look at them. The first one is to win dependency. Now, you probably didn't wake up this morning and say, one of my top goals, win dependency. It's probably not sitting somewhere in your arena, but say it with me so you know what we're talking about. To help him win what? Dependency. You see, he was 17 years old, and to give you context, he had this vision from God. This thing God put in his heart, and here was the essence of it. He was standing, and his brothers were bowing. Now, we'll pause, and we'll come back. See, his 10 older brothers were already jealous of him because Joseph, from a very influential family, descendants of Abraham, was in a very favored position. He was his dad's favorite among the boys. He was given a coat of many colors. It's called an ornamented coat, which kind of signified his place in the family. His brothers were bitter and angry and jealous. And so this was a highly dysfunctional family environment. Already, he was recognized as a player. But now he has this vision. And so he comes to his brothers. Instead of holding it in himself, he decides, oh, guys, brothers, you got to hear this. This is so good. So good. You ready? Here's the vision from God. Oh. Okay. I'm standing. You're bowing. Huh? Isn't that good? Doesn't that feel good? They were no more excited than anybody else's when somebody says, I got a vision. I'm standing. You're bowing. How do you feel about that? And you get married. Hey, guess what? I'm going to stand. You're bowing. You know, I mean, nobody gets excited about that. But when you dream of you rising to something, going somewhere. But he was highly insensitive to his brothers, and this just incensed them to greater anger. But of course, Joseph's waiting for God to do something cool. You know what happens? In the course of time, his father sends him out, check out his brothers, do a report on them, kind of shepherding a long distance away. And when they see his brother coming, they say, let's get rid of Joseph. Literally. Let's see what becomes of his dream. So when he shows up, they take him, they throw him in a pit, literally a cistern, a dry well, throw him to the bottom, horrible place, dark. They took his coat off him, ripped his coat up, tore it up, put ram's blood on it, took it home to dad. This was pre-DNA days. And told dad, looks like Joseph's coat. Somebody must have got him. Some animal tore him up. His dad concludes his son, his favorite son, is dead. And he weeps over him and has a funeral. You know what they did with Joseph? They took him from the pit. A caravan was coming by and they sold him into slavery. Can you imagine the anguish of this 17-year-old soul begging for his life? And they just watched him all away and they said, let's see what comes of his dreams. His dream's dead. And I'll bet Joseph believed it. Now what's curious is that God's hand was in all of this. And when you're in pits, you wonder, where is God? And what God was doing is stripping Joseph of all the things that he was familiar with that probably convinced him he could have pulled this dream off. After all, I'm from a favored family. My father is wealthy. And what was God doing? God stripped him of his family name, his family wealth, his family influence. He stripped him of his significance, of his coat, of all, think about, of all the things that he would have used. In fact, what if God was actually stripping him of his independence? What if God was stripping Joseph of his self-reliance? What if God was actually endeavoring to form in him a dependency on the God who created him? What if God was trying to say to him, it is my purpose that I want you on. It will take my power. What if God's inviting all of us here to get on his purpose, but reminding us it will take his power. And he's trying to form us into a dependency on him because we were designed to do life with him to get on his purpose by his power. What if we really don't understand how God grows us up? See, we understand a material world. We understand that the way we grow up in a physical, material, human world is that we start at dependency, right? When you're born, you're very dependent on your parents and on everyone. Can't do anything for yourself. I have a 3-year-old, little Jaden, adorable. I also have a son who's going to college next month. Yes, they're both from the same wife, and I don't want to talk about it, okay? I have an 18-year-old, I have a 16-year-old, I have an 11-year-old, and I have a miracle called the 3-year-old. Now, I fully understand what's going on here. Because the 3-year-old cries out, I gotta go potty, and wrecks every vacation we ever go. Shuts everything down. He just, he's so dependent. But ultimately, I want to move him along the line so that he can become like his eldest brother, where he is independent. In fact, as some friends once said, I didn't believe, but I do now, that God makes your kids teenagers so you're okay with them leaving. Because when they're young, I'm like with my little kids, oh, you could never leave. I just love them. By teenagers, you might be able to. By 18, you know where the door is. So I love my 18-year-old. We get along great. We have great. But you know what? It's okay now. You can go. It's okay. God bless you. Come back and visit. Love you, son. So we have a great relationship. But you know, I want, and you know, I don't want Jaden at 18 years old yelling from the back, I got to go potty. You know what? Take care of yourself. We all know how to grow up in a material physical world. You know what? We're not all that familiar with what it means to mature and grow up in the spirit world. Because you know what the most immature place is in the spirit world? Spiritually speaking? Independence. And God is in process of growing us to the maturity of dependency on him. And what if God's stripping you of your independent, self-reliant spirit? If you don't know that's what he's doing, your resistance could cost you so much more. And you're wondering, where is God? And what if all along God is right there with you, teaching you that you can never pull off his purpose on your power, and you can't leverage his power for your purpose? What if? The very first gate God might have been helping Joseph win was dependency. The second was helping him win within. In fact, maybe it'll just help you if I put those in front of you so you kind of visually have them. The very first gate he was helping him to win was what? Dependence. Okay. So right there, God was helping him crash through. And let's just pick the next one. What if the next one was to help him win? I'll just do it this way. Win within. What if God was really saying, Joseph, the next major gate that I want to help you grow through, and we'll do this many times, is to win within? Because many of us think that the greatest problems are around us, when in fact the greatest battles are where? I gave you the answer ahead of time, just so you know. If you're like, I don't know. Well, just pay attention. So let's do it again. Most of us think the greatest problems in life are around us. And where are the greatest problems? Where are they? Within us. The greatest battles you will ever conquer are within you. Most of the times you lose out on your dreams because of what's unresolved within you. Joseph went into Potiphar's home as a slave, started at the very bottom. Moving his way up, he became the chief of slaves. Not like that's a great goal in life, but there he was, better than the bottom. And while he was there of influence in Potiphar's household, Potiphar's wife advanced on him. Sexual proposal. An invitation to pleasure and indulgence. Aggressively so. Now you have to stop for a moment. Just take a stop. Sidebar. He was 22 to 24 years old at this time. been away from home at least 5 years or more. It was obvious his family thought he was dead. Nobody was coming for him. He's not in his familiar place of worship. He's not around friends. He's not around family. He's far from home. And you know, when you're far from home, you're willing to take some risks and do some things because nobody's watching. And temptation runs deep in private places. We all know the battles we have within on many fronts. And God was about to help a young man form character, integrity, moral strength, win within. And what if God's putting you in places where he can form that in you? And we're all about, get me to the vision, get me to the dream. And God's about, I'd like to form this in you first. In those moments, he demonstrated unusual godliness. And he resisted the temptation and preserved himself. And what did he get for that? If you read the story, the reward was prison. Isn't that great? Because she lied and said he really did it and pursued her and it was all on him and it wasn't. And he ends up in prison. You know, isn't that a great testimony? Can't you imagine him saying, thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. You ought to come follow me. You ought to see the God I follow. My life sucks. Join me. Isn't that great testimony? Follow God like I follow him. I've been following him for years and look, I am in a prison now. And yet God was with him all along. And what if the first thing God was helping him win is dependency and the second thing was to win within? And what if the third thing God was actually helping form in him and help him win was to win with others? Stay with me in the story. Let me catch up if you're unfamiliar with it. What if while he was in the place of servanthood in Potiphar's home, and what if while he was in prison, we all know he was in places like this position right here. Or maybe he's on his knees and he's cleaning the floor and he's and you know what he's remembering? You know what he's remembering? He's down here and and important people are walking by and he's invisible to them. He's dismissed. And he remembers. You know, back home, I used to be the important one walking by people who were invisible to me, who I once dismissed. And maybe in those moments, God was transforming the way he saw others. And maybe God was reforming the reality that everyone has equal value, that we all matter equally to God. Maybe God was transforming the way he would treat other people from then on. And maybe God's doing those kinds of things in your life. Maybe God has you in jobs and environments and relationships and circumstances where you feel like you are in personal hell. And yet, like Joseph, you were once all about you and maybe you are more than you know. I think God was transforming the kid from the inside out. And helping him win with others in a way that nobody else could have helped him. What a kindness of God. Maybe the final lesson was this. Maybe it was first dependency and then win within and then win with others. And when I study it and press in, what if the next major thing God was helping him win was win results? Win what? Results. The thing that does matter, that you're in a world where you got to deliver and make a difference and you got to win results. Because do you know what happened? He's now been 13 years between pits and slavery and prison, and now he's begging God to get him out of the circumstance, still 13 years later, and what happens? What happens? Pharaoh has a vision. In Pharaoh's vision, he can't figure it out. He doesn't know what it means. Nobody else can figure it out. And finally, somebody remembers, there was a kid in prison who could interpret dreams. They call up Joseph. Joseph's standing there, and Pharaoh says, can you interpret dreams? And you know what he says? You know what he should have said? Absolutely, because this is my way out. I can do anything. Yeah, give me a shot. You know what he says? No, I can't. But God can. You see, he's already been changed. He's already been transformed. He's already got a new way of seeing life, renewed mind. He said, but God can if he wants to. See the dependency? No cliche for him now. God gave him the translation, interpreted the vision. There's going to be 7 years of feast, 7 years of famine. Pharaoh would be wise to appoint someone to oversee the economics of Egypt so that during the 7 years of feast, we withhold and we set aside and we storehouse so that during the famine, we live. Pharaoh says, I don't see anybody smarter than you. And he put him second in charge. And in one day, he went from prison to second in command in the palace. And that, men and women, is a very good day. Isn't it? I mean, when you think about the days you want to have, that'd be a good day. That'd be a good day. Talk about your promotions. And as God pressed in on this, you wonder, where was God? God was cheering him on the whole way. Maybe God was doing the kinds of things that are talked about in the New Testament. With a letter that was written from a pastor to his people, like if Brian being absent here wrote a letter to you. In Romans chapter 12 it says, therefore I urge you brothers in view of God's mercy to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern. To the what? Pattern. Don't conform any longer to the pattern of this world. In other words, there is a pattern to the way the world does things. Therefore, you need to know what that pattern is and don't conform to it, which means there must be a pattern to the way God does things, and make sure you walk in that, because if you really want to know the favor of God over your life, you want to know God's purpose and walk in, if you want his blessing over your life, okay, you want to know what God has for you, well, okay, what's the pattern? So no longer conform to the pattern of the world. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. We just began to think, you know, I had to transfer this in my own life, and God was helping me do that, and I wanted to teach my son how to do life well. And so a few years back, when my now graduated 18-year-old was 11 years old, I began to teach him these thoughts in a way he could receive it. So I said, what has a pattern in life that he can follow? I picked baseball, not because it's all about baseball, but because there is a pattern to the game. If you don't know the game, I wrote some rules down for you. This is really helpful. You might want to just take notes because it's going to change right here, the rules. Yeah, here we go. See if you know this. The bases stay the same, but the league of play changes. How many bases are there in baseball? Now, including home plate. How many are there? Four. Sharp crowd. Four. Home plate, first, second, third, back home. Okay, we get all that. But understand this. There are not two in baseball during middle school, three in high school, four in AAA, and seven in pro because they're really good. It's not how the game's played. And you know what? Spiritually speaking, in your transformation process, there aren't a group of things that just keeps more and more and more and more bases to cover. No. Only four. What changes is league of play. Complexity. How deeply can you walk in it? Let's keep going. Rules of the game of baseball. Here's go. You score only when you cross, humor me. Only when you cross what? Okay, home plate. And you cannot score at home plate until you've covered what? All the bases, first, second, third, good. And if you miss a base, you're called out. And by the way, that's true in life. Baseball is full of strikeouts and fresh starts. And what do they call it when you run to the wrong base? Little League. Yeah. It's the only time it's funny. When a 4-year-old hits the ball and runs to third base, everybody laughs. Why? Because it's Little League. You know it's Little League by the way they run the bases. But when a major leaguer hits the ball and runs to third base, you go to the Reds game, guy hits the ball, runs to third base. Yeah! And they interview him. What were you thinking? It's shorter. It's quicker. I looked the game over and I said, hey, run to third, run home. Score! I mean, do they put that out on the ticker? No! And score. You were out. But have you figured out the pattern in God's design of life? Because the order of the bases matter, and that's true in the order in which God created us to walk with him. So here we go. Let's take a simple layout like the diamond, and let's put the home first, second, and third. And what if there is just a simple picture that unfolds a simple pattern that helps us understand what God might be doing while he's forming his dreams in us? What if home plate is all about God's purpose and God's power being formed in our life? And in reality, God is saying, you cannot achieve my purpose on your power, which is our nature. As soon as we discern what God has for us, we're like, I'll go take care of that. I'm in charge. And our self-reliance rises up. God says, no, it's going to happen. Or the other side of the equation, we're like, I have a purpose. All I need God to do is add his power to it. Just pray and poof. You know, wouldn't that be great? God, I got my purpose. Now I'm going to pray that you make that poof happen. God says, no, you don't get my power for your purpose, and you can't pull off my purpose on your power. I'm going to teach you how to live in the center of dependency, where I am the center of your life. I am the vine, you are the branches. John 15:5 says, if man or woman remain in me, you will bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. Your life will come to nothing. All that you achieve will be recognized as nothing. Nothing will come from the life that can pull off only what human spirit can pull off. But the Holy Spirit in you, rightly aligned with God, depending on Him, will make it possible for you to realize the dreams God has for you. But you have to walk in dependency. That's the first and last lesson we ever learned, perhaps. And what is the very first thing the power of God is designed to do? Change everything around you? No. Change everything where? Within you. First base character. That the intent of God is to form you in His image so that you are from the inside out the kind of person that can carry out the dream, the design God has for you. Because oftentimes our gifts can lead us further than our character can sustain us. And God is intending to transform us from the inside out. And often our prayer life sounds like a litany of changing everything around me. Oh God, you know my spouse. I didn't know when I married them the kind of baggage they were bringing in, but you did. And they need help. Oh God, change my spouse. And God, while you're at it, would you change my kids? Because they have so much of my spouse in them. Change my kids. And God, if you could change my spouse and change my kids, our home would be great. And why, God, could you change my boss? Could you change my income? Could you change my house? Could you change my decor? Could you change my clothes? Could you change my car? Could you change my bank accounts? Could you change my vacation? God, could you change everything around me? Could you change my church and change my pastor and change my small group leader? God, could you change everything around me? And as soon, God, as you change everything around me, life will be better. And what if God's whispering, how about if I just change you? How about if the very first thing the power of God is designed to do is change everything within you, not around you. And we're out here working on everything around us and the Spirit of God is working on everything within us. No wonder we're not cooperating. Because as God begins to form things in you through character, you become a trustworthy person for second base issues we call community. You can actually engage in authentic community because you are winning with others. Think of it like this. What's the first and greatest command of all? To love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. And the second is like unto the first, Jesus said. The second is to love your neighbor, to love others as you love who? As you love yourself. And I think in a very real sense, as simple as the diagram suggests, that God is saying, love me, home plate, it's where you begin, it's where you end. I give you power at the plate of your life, so to speak. Love me with everything in you, make me the center of your life. And when you do that, you should love yourself, and you will rightly love yourself because you know that you have your identity in me. I love you, you're created in my image. Now you don't have to compete or compare to anyone. You don't have to accumulate stuff to become someone because your significance and your identity is in me. And now that you're secure in me, you are actually free to love others rather than use others. Imagine what that kind of life would look like if we did it by God's design. And all along, God is saying, I'm trying to form this in you. And as you invest and care for others as I design, third base is all about competence. In a very real sense, God said, I give them gifts, talents, abilities, train them so that you become competent in the things I've called you to do. But first, I want you to be who I called you to be so that as you do what I've called you to do, you can ultimately leverage it for what I called you to ultimately do in purpose so that you leverage the success of your career and whatever gifts, talents you have on third base and bring them home, so to speak, for significance. No baseball player gets to third base and pretends that he scored. Achievement and success is not a cul-de-sac in of itself. It has to be surrendered for your ultimate significance of why God put you here on earth. And so if this is the way God created us, to love Him, love ourselves, love others, love what we do, and do all for the glory of God, if that's the pattern, how has the world trained us to run the bases? What's their pattern? The world runs the bases backwards. We live in a performance-driven society that is all about what you do, because who you are is what you do. And when you are in the pressure of a performance-driven society, you are tempted to cheat all the other bases. And it's why we feel pressure to cheat, pour into our marriage relationship as we know we need and what it needs, and in the life of our kids. And we're always under pressure because we really don't know how to negotiate the dream of life that we have, because we're running it backwards. Because we bought into the thinking of the world and the renewing of our mind to do life by His design. And we will be pressured to cheat in character. No wonder we have no time for God, no time to pursue God, no time to be in places like this and pray in the morning, pursue and be attentive to Him. Because we are under pressure to do things by the world's design, because you are what you do. And what if God's design is seek me first and all these other things will come as you fully follow me? Because what He grants is the gift of favor. Like in Joseph's life, when he went from the prison to the palace, what a gift. Did you know that 22 years after he was sold into slavery at the age of 39 during the famine, that a family came to Joseph, second in charge of Egypt, now an obvious full Egyptian to the minds of everyone. A group of men knelt before him and asked for help. Do you know who they were? His brothers. And it jumped back in his mind. Oh my, when I was 17. And all along, God had been fulfilling the dream, but he had to grow somebody up before they experienced it. Never put a period where God puts a comma. And in Crossroads, Atlanta, through very difficult years, where I would have put a period, God only put a comma. And as God grew us through His design, we began to experience God's favor. Favor is an amazing kindness of God. It's when God does for you what you could never do for yourself. And the church began to grow into the hundreds and to the thousands. And in that process, we needed new land, and that next piece of land that we needed was on the corner that would put us on a major highway. We eventually bought other 85 acres next to it, but we needed that corner piece. We didn't have any money at the time, and I remember going to the door of the man who obviously owned it. I assumed he did, and I lost courage. I literally got out of the car. I'm walking to the door. I'm supposed to be a courageous leader here. Walking to the door, I lost courage, went back to my car, drove away. I couldn't do it. How do you go to the door and have to tell a guy, love your land here? Would you like to sell it? Actually, I don't have any money. Would you like to give it? I know you've never met me. I mean, that just seems bizarre to me. So I don't know how you do that. I don't know how you do that. But in God's providential kindness, we're out golfing one day, and I find out a friend invited this guy, and I find out this guy owns that land. Oh, okay, God, I'm a wimp, but you're helping. God formed a relationship in time. I sat over a donut with Doug, and I said, Doug, I've been looking at your land. It'd be a great place for a church. He's like, you couldn't afford it. I didn't say I wanted to buy it. I just said I wanted it. I know I can't afford it. He said, no, look on. And over time, eventually, Doug, we were sitting down that time. He said, you know what? That land would be a great place for a church. Oh, Doug, you are so right. How do you get these ideas? You are a genius. That's a great idea. Now, the point I'm saying, Doug, could I just walk your land occasionally? And he said, oh, sure, anytime you want. Bad call, because I prayed. You know I did. Walked it, prayed. At one point, I finally went to our board of elders. I said, guys, I think God's going to do something amazing. I think God's favor is going to, I think God's going to ask Doug to give us the land. I think we're going to get it free and clear. And they looked at me like you're looking at me. And the vice chairman looked at all the guys around, and he went, oh, act like you don't know what I'm doing. I love the look of some. What was that? You know exactly what that was. Now, that's not what we do at our board meetings, but that does tell you where I got my board members, okay? So, what this really means when we do this in our meetings, when it goes, it means you're high. This is not, it's a kind way of saying you're off your rocker. So he just went, hey, anybody want what the pastor's smoking? So I felt validated as a spiritual leader and a man of faith. And some short time thereafter, Doug came to our board meeting and said, I've settled on a price. He said, gentlemen, don't know how to explain it. God's asked me to give you the land. He signed over the deed, slid it across the table, and I went, now does anybody want what the pastor's smoking? It literally happened that way. And you know what? When you see God's favor, you want to smoke that stuff. You want to be in on the power of this amazing God to pour over your life and do with dreams what only God can do. But you have to be willing to walk with him to have his favor. Never put a period where God puts a comma. And I don't know where your dreams are these days, and I don't know where you are with God, but I'd like the privilege to pray with you. So if you'd bow your heads with me. Father, across this crowd, we are all different places, but there is a question that just presses in and challenge. Which way do we run the bases? And some of us would confess we run backwards. And maybe part of this, it never occurred to us. But Father, I ask that your Spirit would give us insight for the next level for our walk with you and give us the courage and the will to walk well in it. And just maybe, God, you're in process of walking with us and bringing about dreams we thought were once dead. May it be so in Christ's name. Amen. You are dismissed.